The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker tov, Kathy. Moedim l'simcha. How are you guys doing today?
Yeah, very well. I'm just absolutely stunned at how very, very smart our listeners are. They really are. How's this for a sports question? In what sport do you have to go backwards in order to win? So I get an answer from our sports guy that says tug of war. All of a sudden, all these other answers start coming in, and they're all correct.
Well, you have to get Louis sorted out here. I mean, yeah. You can't ask a question that's got 100 answers, right?
Well, especially you can, but you've got to give all 100 answers. So I did check with him, and he's accepting all these answers. Tug of war, backstroke, rowing, darts, and high jump. Because apparently darts is scored backwards. I didn't know that. So they're taking it to another level.
Backwards in terms of the score rather than physically move
backwards.
Okay, I'm with you on that. I can see it.
Yeah. Okay, Louis. Anthony, let's get to some of the news. Speculation about the United States peace plan continues in the press. It's even forced Jason Greenblatt to come out in public to deny some of the rumors. So why is this a conversation before it's actually a conversation is the first thing.
Well, I mean, that's the irony, isn't it, that Jason Greenblatt is tweeting all kinds of denials when, in fact, the main meat of the plan is still not known. And so they're keeping that very much under wraps, but lots and lots of other rumors are being denied. The latest one to be denied is this possibility of a confederation being put together, which will include Israel, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority. And apparently, the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has said that over the past summer, the U.S. team had apparently floated this idea directly with him and suggested that this might be something that's at the heart of their peace plan. Jason Greenblatt has come out on Twitter saying that that King Abdullah and Jordan are strong U.S. allies. So that's his first statement. So it seems as if this idea of a confederation may well have upset the Jordanians in some way, maybe insulted them. And he has been forced to come out in order to try somehow to protect King Abdullah and the Jordanian regime by saying that the idea of a confederation is not happening. And then he goes on to say rumors that our peace vision includes a confederation between Jordan, Israel, and the Palestinian Authority, or that the vision contemplates making Jordan the homeland for Palestinians are incorrect. Please don't spread rumors. So, you know, this idea of the Palestinians being housed in Jordan or somehow linking Jordan together with the Palestinian Authority has been spoken about for the longest time. And the reason is that Jordan, of course, after 1948, between 1948 and 1967, Jordan was the ruler over what is now called the West Bank. And there was at that time no attempt to try somehow to separate the West Bank into an independent Palestinian state. So therefore, the conclusion that is reached by those events in history is that the Palestinians were actually satisfied to be part of Jordan at that time, seeing as there was no attempt to create independence for them. And that it's only since 1967 when Israel won the West Bank over as part of the Six-Day War that the whole motivation, the movement, the whole idea of putting together a separate Palestinian state has even been floated. And so therefore people are saying, well, if the Palestinians were happy between 1948 and 1967 to be part of Jordan, why wouldn't they be happy to be part of Jordan now? And let's, you know, somehow create some sort of a combined state for both the Palestinians and the Jordanians, which will effectively form part of Jordan or some sort of a confederation. So that's really what the basis for these rumors has been. And of course, the Jordanians are very happy not to have anything to do with that. We know that there's certainly a lot of conflict, a lot of history between the Palestinians and the Jordanians, not least of which King Abdullah's grandfather, King Abdullah before him, was actually murdered by Palestinians or people who were not Jordanians but kind of regarded themselves as separate. They weren't called Palestinians in those days because the term Palestinian is only just a recent development, a recent invention for those people who want to have an independent state within the West Bank. But be that as it may, that group of people who we now know as the Palestinians are actually somewhat at loggerheads with the Jordanians, and King Abdullah would certainly be happy enough not to include them in any Jordanian state or confederation moving forward. So this is Jason Greenblatt coming out and really protecting King Abdullah just to make sure that his plan should not be considered in any way to suggest to the Jordanians that they're going to have to take on the issue, in inverted commas, of the Palestinians. But interestingly also, you know, Jason Greenblatt does seem to have been quite vocal in writing various things in the press in the USA. And the things that he seems to write all really focus around Gaza and the fact that whatever is happening in Gaza, and particularly the humanitarian problems that are being experienced in Gaza, are all the fault of the Hamas government. And he goes on to write that when we see Arab Israelis and how they live, they have a very, very decent standard of living. They have all the humanitarian comforts that one would expect. And so therefore that's down to the Israeli government who's given that to them.
Anthony?
And the issue is that Hamas has really caused the suffering of the people in Gaza. The Arabs who live in Gaza really suffer because Hamas is using the money that is given to them for military purposes and not using it for humanitarian purposes. So Greenblatt has been quite vocal in the U.S. press, but nothing about what may be in the peace plan, but rather a lot of what's not in the peace plan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the biggest lies ever told, Anthony, is that the plight of the Palestinian people in Gaza is Israel's fault. It is the fault of their rulers. And you know, sometimes it's so obvious to us as people who follow the politics of, you know, the Palestinians versus Israelis, and we look at the dynamics and we analyze and we zoom in and we zoom out. But, you know, we take it for granted that everybody else knows that. And clearly the world does not know that.
It's very, very easy to put the blame on Israel for what's going on in Gaza.
No, blame
simply
Israel.
Because yeah. Israel has control over those crossings, and Israel maintains a very, very tight level of security all the way around Gaza, including in the sea off the coast of Gaza. But, you know, the piece of the rhetoric that is often forgotten is the one which talks about why Israel has actually had to be forced to place this security blanket around Gaza, because if the security wasn't around Gaza in the way that it is, then the militarization of Gaza would be far worse than it already is. And as we know, Gaza has enough military power and military hardware to launch a decent and very threatening war against Israel. And one could imagine that if those security checks and controls hadn't been placed around Gaza, what kind of a military setup would be in place in Gaza at the moment rather than the one that we'll already see. So, I mean, there is certainly a reason for it, and the reason is not to try and keep the people of Gaza downtrodden, and it's not to try and limit the Gazan economy in any way. On the contrary, I think that Israel would have been delighted if they would have taken Gaza, be it Fatah or Hamas, whoever the rulers in Gaza, would have taken it and really developed it into a thriving economy and given people there a high quality of life, and not used it as a springboard to attack Israel in order to try effectively to get the Jews out of the land that we already have. I mean, that's really the only interpretation that we can reach from what's been going on in Gaza, is that this is all just an attempt to try and eradicate Jews from Israel.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we need to just say about Jordan, and I heard you talking about some of the history,
yeah,
is that, of course, we need to bear in mind that King Abdullah represents the Hashemites, and the Hashemites are the minority in Jordan. And so he is very, very conscious of that fact and very constantly nervous about his position as the leader of the Hashemite tribe and the Hashemites in their position as a minority group within Jordan. So therefore he's having to play this one very, very carefully, not only vis-a-vis the Palestinian issue, but of course against vis-a-vis others who are residents and citizens of Jordan, and who recognize that he, is really representing a minority group rather than the majority.
Okay. Anthony, let's move on. Intel has launched its most powerful ever generation of laptop processors designed entirely in Israel. So what are the details of these new processors and where can we get them?
Well, these processors are going to be called the ninth generation Intel Core Mobile H-series processor. And these processors are already being incorporated into laptops produced by all the big name laptop producers that you could think of. And the interesting thing for me is that this is a processor not only that was entirely designed by the Haifa-based Intel Development Center, but also that this is a processor which is really aimed at the gaming community. This is like super duper powerful. And it's interesting that these days the most effort is being placed in producing highly powerful and high generation processors for gamers. It includes video graphics, and it includes 33% better overall performance compared with a three-year-old PC. And this is really going to give all the gaming community what they need. And it astonishes me to see that the gaming community represents something like 500 million people around the world. That these are people, this is now a market within itself. Even more than 500, perhaps even 600 million people who are PC gamers and who are needing this very, very high processor power in order to play their games. And of course, let's also think about the PC-based content creators who are also developing this content for the gaming community. That represents another 100 million users or so. So this is an interesting one that's going out on the market, or that has already gone out on the market this month. And it's just another, or this week even, and it's just another feather in the cap for Israeli ingenuity and for the relationship that Intel and Israel have, which is goes back quite a few years, and just reinforces the fact that it doesn't really matter what technological device you are using these days. The chances are, a very, very high chance, that you have Israeli technology built into the device that you're using.
All right, Anthony, very, very quickly, because we've got to get to news. Israelis are being forced to endure an extra day of Pesach this year for the second year in a row.
What a chutzpah.
What a cheek. What a
chutzpah.
Why the extra day of Pesach?
We're standing on the banks of the Red Sea. This is apparently when the crossing of the Red Sea took place by the Israelites who were leaving Egypt. This is the moment that we celebrate the second part of Pesach. And in Israel, it's always celebrated on the seventh day. And then after that, no more. 7 days isn't enough. Whereas, of course, in the diaspora, Pesach lasts for 8 days. But this year, as it was last year, the end of Pesach, which is tomorrow night, rolls straight into Shabbat. And as a result of that, there is no opportunity for the chametz to be repurchased from the person to whom all the chametz have been sold before Shabbat comes in. So therefore, we're all having to keep as if though it was an eighth day of Pesach, even though it's not Pesach, it's just an ordinary Shabbat, but of course eating as if though it was Pesach. And so it's 8 days of Pesach for us again this year, unfortunately. But I hope that all of you will enjoy your chag for your Pesach of 2 days or whatever you're going to be celebrating. And of course have a good Shabbat over the weekend. And I will look forward to chatting about the latest developments on Monday morning again as usual.
Thank you so much. Anthony Reich, Chag Sameach, and you'll be speaking to Howard on Monday. Yay, the world goes back to normal. Thank you so much.
We will catch up and see what Howard's got to say on Monday, but I'm sure that by then there will be a lot of news to talk about.
Have no doubt. Thank you. God bless.
Take care.
Anthony.
Take care. Bye.